Hello, everybody, and welcome to Lang Time Chat, episode 61. This is the beginning of something brand new. We are going to, well, I guess to back up a little bit, we have a Patreon. We, by we, I mean me, David, and Jesse over there. You can say hi. There's Jesse. And we had said if we ever hit 65 members, we were going to start doing Conlang reviews for patrons. We've updated that a little bit. And so, first of all, we hit it. And so we're starting. But we're doing three different types of Conlang reviews. One is just kind of show and tell so that we can just spotlight patrons' Conlangs. Another is like, you know, reviewing some specific portion of the Conlang. And then the other is working on something together. So to start things off, we were going to do a show and tell with perhaps, maybe this is controversial, but perhaps the most famous language from all of our entire patronage. And it's probably even more famous.
That's
than
not
the
true.
Languages.
Pipperidian's one of your patrons now.
That is true.
It is true. But I would say Biblioridian is more famous than any of his conlangs.
I feel, well, that is also true, but I feel, though, that we can safely say this one has the most infamous story behind it.
That's true.
And so, you know, it's well known for also having a bit of a sad tale.
Yeah.
Not because the language itself, but because David or Jake. But, well,
we were kind of racing the cart past the horse fell, so to speak. So let us introduce the co-host and co-creator of Let's Have a Booba, Jake Penny.
Yay. Hello, everyone.
All right, everybody knows Jake because Jake is. Perhaps, I mean, I haven't looked at the stats recently, but I still think that Jake tops out as our funniest patron, like by at least 4.3%.
I feel Patrick and
Bubba Matthes.
Patrick, Bubba Matthes, they're all in the background going,
Matthes has quality, but then when it comes to quantity, it's severely lacking. What can I say?
I shoot every shot I get. Like, that's what I'll say. I don't think I hit every time, but when I do hit, I think I do well.
That's right.
When you do hit, it slaps.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jake, do you want to just do a quick little intro to the language, and we can hit on why I say it's a bit infamous?
Sure. So, Angashku was the language that I created for Sony's Madam Web. I got paid. I got to speak to one of the actors. I thought it was all fine. And I show up on, it's actually Valentine's Day. I go to the cinema.
That's right.
Turns out they didn't use it. It could have been maybe one of the most seen conlangs of the patronage. And now it is, and I will say in quite a thoroughly reworked state. Mm-hmm. Probably the conlang I'm most proud of. But that was like with a whole bunch of revisions made when I used it in the YouTube relay, actually, now I come to think about that.
Nice.
I think, yeah.
And I do want to say hats off to Jake, because for anybody who has created a language and then moved on and, you know, worked on others, and I know that, Jake, you had worked on other languages after kind of setting Pankeshka aside. It can be really hard to return to a project and get into that mindset, and then get into that mindset enough that you make the changes that will make it stronger. And so major hats off to you, because that is a process to go through. It's like a whole set of mental hoops you have to jump through. And I have definitely loved watching some of the developments that you have done. Every time you talk about it and I learn something new about the language, I'm just like, this is so freaking cool. So I'm glad that we're talking about it today.
I think one thing to bear in mind is that, like, I made it specifically for the purpose of the film to begin with.
Yeah.
So I didn't expect anyone to have to translate out of it. and so there was a lot more variation in how things turned out. And I think Lexigy can give you, like, a false sense of what your language should look like at the end. Not everything is applied in the same way all the time, even if the idea of grammatical sound changes doesn't really make sense. I can get more into it, but probably worth noting a few things before we talk about comparison. Mm-hmm. So the language was designed specifically to kind of evoke Amazonian languages, but without taking anything directly from any of them. One of the other patrons who goes by Nat or Rooftop Octopus said at one point, I'm still never entirely sure if this is fully a compliment or not, but basically that Pankashku was a kind of uncanny valley Amazonian language. if you know what Amazonian languages are like, it sort of seems like a lot of them, but without really being any individual one, which I think for me meant I had done my job well. Yes. And I had achieved my goal.
Yeah, and I have to say, the first time that I saw this Madam Web script, what I said and what I told them, in fact, was this should probably be a natural language. And that was the whole reason that I sent them to Jake, because I thought Jake could do it. And when they insisted that it be a conlang, I think basically you did the exact thing that was required, and did it to a T.
Yeah, so one of the suggestions from David was that this should be in Quechua. I studied Cusco Quechua with a university in Peru during COVID. So actually around the same time as when I was joining Langtime Studios. So
that's right.
David and Jesse got the full experience of me introducing myself in Quechua in the comments of the streams saying, oh, that's a really nice sounding conlang. And I had to say, oh, actually it's Aymara. And
God, that's amazing.
So I think and there's also the whole history of was it Hatties actually being Quechua. So Quechua is a language that, like, lends itself to conlang-esqueness for some good and some bad reasons. It's one of the most regular languages I've ever encountered, not in the sense of being normal, but in the sense of everything is, like, has a one form and very rarely changes.
That's pretty cool.
I'll get started on what we actually, what I actually wanted to talk about.
Right on.
I think, I'm actually in the stream version. Here we go. I'll actually start with this picture. Jesse, and was it a podcast episode that you shared about comparison?
No, so there was something I had written up on Patreon way back in season one for Ngalo, and we were talking about, like, you know, how we were going to handle comparisons in the language. But this actually came from the textbook that I wrote. So like this is all developed for the textbook, and then I shared the image in Discord because I was just like, look at this turtle and mouse.
Yeah. And by the way, this is for those that are just listening right now, this is an image of a turtle and a mouse that Jesse drew in order to show comparison, so that the mouse was smaller than the turtle. And it's honestly, it's one of the best illustrations I've ever seen in the entirety of my life. Just, I can't even describe how much joy looking at the mouse tail brings me. It's so perfect. Anyway, so yeah, that's what you would be looking at if you were looking at the video. Jake, go on.
So the purpose of the image is to set out the kind of three main parts of a comparison. So it defines like the quality, the topic, and the standard. And it's very useful to have like one set of definitions, because basically in the literature, apparently they use so many different words for these things. And I thought, having seen this image, I would use it as I was developing the comparison model for Pankashka for the Let's Have a Relay, which is a bit of a spoiler, I guess, but everyone here already knows what's in it. And by the point in time that this comes out, I think whatever was in the Pankashka text is a memory for people who were aware of it in January.
Right, yes.
So more on that in time. So my section basically takes this example, and one of the confusing things is, I shouldn't scroll too much.
You're all right. This is good. The be sure to say them aloud so everybody can hear them.
Yeah. So, the topic of comparison is a little bit of a confusing one talking about Pankashka, because Pankashka has both topic marking. A feature, I don't know what the right word is. It's not to the same extent as, for example, a language like Japanese or Korean, in which topic, subject, object is the principal way in which kind of core arguments are marked. I'm never sure if it's marking or indexing or flagging after that distinction got messed up. Like in Japanese, the classic example would be like, watashi wa deiku desu. So it's like, watashi is I, wa is the topic marker, and then jake desu is I'm Jake. And it's like, regarding myself, I am Jake. But then you would carry on and you wouldn't reintroduce the topic. And in a number of languages like Japanese, like Quechua, like many languages on the eastern side of the Andes. The Andes runs from Colombia down through Ecuador, Peru, into Bolivia, and then forms the border between Chile and Argentina. And the languages of the region, so the Amazon basin, it covers a wide part of the tropical area of South America, and it goes all the way up to the tree line of the Andes. And so there are a number of Amazonian languages that have clear influence in their structure from Quechua. Some of this is, we think, older. And by we, I mean within Amazonian linguistics, there's no real area of the Amazon that can be considered a true linguistic area is one thing I always try and point out, because as soon as people start talking about Amazonian languages, it's important to recognize it's purely a geographical designation. There isn't any one feature, be it phonological or grammatical, or even you could argue there are cultural features that are shared. And certainly there are plenty of, I don't know how I would say it. I've only ever written like Wanderwörter, like wonder words.
I feel like I would lean into the Wanderwörter pronunciation just because it's...
I don't know what the plural in German is.
No, isn't that plural? Wanderwörter?
Wörter is plural,
yeah. Because the singular would be Wanderwort.
Wort, yeah.
Wort. Okay. Those things. like, there are things that you can trace, and there are language families that are very big. But there are also, like, many, many language isolates that often display quite... unique features, simply because many language isolates, not being related to large language families, have these specific, quite interesting features by nature of there not being many related languages, which obviously then limits the how common these features end up being. One of these is Tikunu, which I actually went through information of about 30 different languages from 20 different language families that are all spoken in the Peruvian Amazon to research for Pankashku.
My goodness. This is the kind of work that goes into conlinking for a movie or television show. And indeed, sometimes the payout is you get nothing from it. Well, okay, no. You got paid, which was great. I mean, but that was going to happen. But like, you know, I have to say it was further disappointing to me because it's not like this has never happened before, but like the biggest time where it had happened in my history was when I arranged the job for Noah, the movie. And Bill Weldon created a language for that. But the thing is, when they cut those languages, the producer that I had been working with and negotiated with, he came directly to me after they made the decision and said, "Hey, this is what has happened. Bill did fantastic work. We were really happy with it. But after looking at the movie, we decided it didn't make sense in the context of the movie, and so we had to cut it." Like, that's really the bare minimum of, I think, professional courtesy. What happened with Madam Web was really disappointing, and I would hope would be atypical. At least in my experience, it's atypical.
After that little tangent,
sorry.
this example that I did based on the image, because I started writing this section without Jesse's blessing for using the image, so I think I went with some other ideas. So in order to encapsulate the general idea from the mouse turtle picture, the titina napiro matus. So titi is mouse, and then in the topic mocha mu bitching with a long vowel. And then nabiro. This obviously the so nabiro for those who are listening is romanized NAP apostrophe IQRO. It should be a P followed by a glottal stop. There aren't phonemic adjectives in Pankashku, but there are coda stops. So it's I think I never really decided what the quality of the coda stops was. But anyway, so
Can I? I'm sorry. Can I pause for just a second and try to understand what's going on here? So, this is what you're suggesting is that there is a syllable boundary here, and it's napiro, napiro,
napiro.
Okay. Why not make it two different words?
Because this is with a, the syllable boundary, napi is the word for turtle and ro is the, case marker.
So are you saying that this should be syllabified N-A-P-I, N-A-P is one syllable, then I is the next syllable?
Napi.
Is the P ejective or is the apostrophe a glottal stop?
The apostrophe is a glottal stop.
So it's a consonant-consonant situation. I was going to say, hearing an ejective P, so. I was like confused why David was asking asking.
and I thought that you were suggesting that this just defies the basic convention of syllabification.
No, I was saying that because it looks like how it, many people would romanize an ejective.
Right. No, it's just a glottal stop. Napiro. Okay. Yeah. Got it. Understood. Thank you.
the weirdest thing, I guess, the thing I really wanted an unrounded back vowel because to me that's like the unrounded high non-front vowels are the things that sound really Amazonian. Hmm. And I was like, if I don't want to use a bad I or some kind of like accented, obviously I've got accents for tone, but some kind of augmented vowel sign, I was going to have to just make U an unrounded vowel. I know my sound quality still isn't great. It was even worse at the time that I was doing the recordings. And I have this deep concern that the sound quality was so bad that the actor couldn't hear the vowel properly. And I tried my hardest to like explain how to produce. But anyway, so mapus, ma is small, and pus is the copula plus third person marking. As we carry on, you'll see napiing sasak vitus. This tus thing is going to be a common occurrence.
Okay.
And so that one is the turtle is bigger, period. Like not bigger than something, just bigger.
Yeah. Let me just review here. So we have the top. By the way, is this I'm assuming a cute accent is tone, right?
Yeah.
So we have teaching na iro matus I'm sorry. Teaching napira matis. Yep. With the unrounded vowels.
The R is round.
The O is round. Oh, I thought the O was unround too.
No.
No, okay, sorry. Teaching napiro matis. That was the roundedest O ever.
I was going to say, David but, really held out that.
Okay. Okay, so.
There's no contrast, right?
Yeah.
So if.
True.
I designed the language hoping that no matter how the actors pronounced it, at least it would kind of make sense.
That's a smart move. But specifically, morphologically, is mouse. That is the topic. Then we have napiro is than the turtle. Napi is turtle, and then so napiro is than the turtle, and then matis is small. So basically, you have is regarding the mouse. With respect to the turtle, it is small. And so the next one, we have napinga, which is turtle with that same topic marker. So you have regarding the turtle, sasak, I'm sorry, sasak, more or most. And then we have vitas, it is big. And so the first one, we have a standard of comparison. So the mouse is being compared to something. And so it's, the mouse regarding this, it's small, meaning that it's smaller than this. For the second one, there is no standard of comparison. There is this word that is essentially translated as sasak, as more or most. And so regarding the turtle, it's bigness, and then it's more most. So that's what we've got so far.
And there's a similar negative one, which is So rapong mean this, which is the iguana is less sad, or the least sad.
And that's generally, I think that's generally true of iguanas. can you please pronounce this less least word for me?
Napnum.
Is that second A a different quality than the
first
one?
Yeah, those are two radically different vowels.
In my head, they are.
Nap.
Okay. I think it's because of the coda consonant. Am I reducing the first one?
Second one.
It's
also like the first A has high tone, so it's more prominent.
Napna.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay.
Nice. Okay.
So so basically, napna is the kind of like negative version of sasak, which, by the way, bless you for this, because I did something very similar for Dothraki. And it raised some eyebrows, shall we say. But I feel like,
it makes sense.
It does. I think so. It's basically what you see here, except composite. I think it's really lovely.
And I also want to point out, I'm liking the fact that, like, something that you couldn't really see by talking about the nga topic marker is it's not just nga, but it also lengthens the vowel in front of it. And so nap-i becomes nap-inga. And so you get that lengthening. But same with the iguana, which I'm assuming without the topic marker would just be rapo with no long vowel. And then with the topic marker, you get raponga, which is like, it's like a really cool thing that you can't, until you hear it or you see it in writing, it's hard to... talk about that topic marker, which, hey, comes with a vowel lengthener, but like until you have a vowel in front of it, it's not pronounced.
Yeah. And that was really inspired by, Bora. In Bora, it has two long vowels, but obviously in English, we just call it Bora.
What
it has a lot of these affixes that affect the preceding syllable, So that was like one of the big inspirations. I couldn't afford to buy a bunch of grammars that I couldn't find for free. But I got a Bora grammar and the Awaruna grammar. So those were like what I turned to when I was like, I have no idea how any Amazonian language deals with X. Right. And I had two examples where I could be like, okay, like this is the sort of thing that happens, because like I've often said, if you're not like going to like be specific about how you're referencing net languages, then I'm not the biggest fan of like a vibes approach.
Uh-huh.
But specifically with Pankashka, I really wanted to like introduce some ideas. So for the conlangers who were interested, it would also kind of introduce them to some ideas. So for example, we've got then the negative version. If you have napiing asasak vitus, then in the negative it'd be napiing asasak vitoshu shu. So rather than reducing the vowel in so the vito is the full form of big or the big one. And then with the copula suffix, then in the positive, the T reduces and becomes a glottal stop. But in the negative, the vowel is preserved. And you also preserve the tone. So,
Hang on a sec. This is really interesting. Can you scroll so that we can see both words on the screen at the same time? Is it possible? I'm not sure if it is. Okay, there we go. Is kind of what we're seeing is essentially the suffix for the top one. Is it T-U-S?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's and the copula third person does singular, it, I think you said, right?
And is it associated with a tone, or is it getting that tone from the final O of the root?
It's getting it because it has an inherent high tone, okay. I think. So I made the distinction between the copula and I think it's the perfective, is that one is t and one is t. I wanted to make sure there was at least some minimal pairs with the tone. Because this has an inherent tone, it means that there's like I'm not like entirely happy with how the tonal system works. The high tones are almost exclusively associated with stops, the inherent high tones.
Mm-hmm.
So basically stops, they're either coded as high tone or low tone if they're syllable initial. With sasak, because there isn't a initial plosive, it gets assigned automatically to the penultimate syllable.
Sure, yeah.
Which is why you get a lot of penultimate high tone.
Wow.
And okay. Why you get, for example, this long high tone in napinga and napunga is mm-hmm. because it's done maroically. So this is a high tone from the glottal stop with the obligatory high tone from the final two mora roll. If this stop was a low tone T, then the high tone would be forced onto the affix. I can say for sure that's high.
Interesting.
So there's just a negative copula suffix.
Right.
Which I think if you are familiar with languages with copula suffixes, I don't mm-hmm. think it seems very exciting, but I guess some people wouldn't. It's a kind of verbalizer. Copula takes verbal marking, so it's a kind of verbalizing suffix that makes a verb that means to be. And then you have your incorporated noun.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So, first of all, I don't think many people would know this about me, given my conlang output. But I absolutely love studying tone systems, specifically register tone systems, anything where it's semi-predictable, right? And so this type of thing, I think I've sidetracked us a little bit, but I love it. I love figuring out how this works, and I love it when there's a series of words where it looks like there must be a pattern and you can't figure it out. And so then you have to like dig into it. And it's like one of the things that this reminds me of, right? Hausa is a register tone language. Hausa also has a copula that also occurs word sentence finally, that is essentially a clitic. And this copula always takes the opposite tone of the previous syllable, which seems just weird. It's like, why? It seems conlangy. It's like, why would that happen, you know? This was a really fascinating example where, in many ways, you kind of get the same thing, but there's a specific reason for it. That's fascinating. I love it. Wow. Anyway, sorry. So, yeah, comparison. Not phonology.
So, you then have cases where, as I said, the topic of comparison isn't always going to be the topic marked part of the sentence. Oh. I did realize coming back to this that I don't think I have any examples where the topic is just in the absolutive case. In theory, for these simpler ones, like the iguana is not sad. Mm-hmm. You could, I think, say rapo napna minyoshu, because it wouldn't be ambiguous.
Because there's nothing else.
I think I've forgotten because of the incorporated, how I'd done the incorporation, whether it could take a subject or not. But I think it can. Which is like, but I think that this way is clearest.
Yeah. And so I want to repeat what Jake just said, but without the actual phonology. So right now we have iguana and the topic is less sad for just the iguana is not the least sad. And Jake is saying that you could leave off the topic marker potentially. because there's nothing else in the sentence. There's no other argument. And I think that makes sense. And it especially makes sense as we get to this next example. So go for that.
So, 티뇨 미응아, 미응아, 지와티 사삭 투슈투스. So, regarding the Amazon, eagle side is how I've glossed this, is the more fast, or in the Amazon, the eagle is the fastest. So I've called T the appodessive case, which means something is on the side of. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure. I don't know at what point something becomes a habit, because I think if I was doing anything else twice, I think it's just twice. I wouldn't call that a habit. It's just something you did two times in a row. but both Yatlau and Pankashku, I think because of the languages that inspired it, they both have a lot of cases. I think in the Yatlau case, I didn't mean to have that pun. the Yatlau situation, I think that it makes more sense to think of them as grammatical particles because of how they work. But it's the sort of thing where you start describing something in one way and it can be quite hard to accept like a different way of analyzing it. In this case, the I actually have the original document that I used when I was creating Pankashku.
Wow.
And it's in Word, which I no longer have institutional access to.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, same.
And so I knew when I was making Pankashku that I wanted like all of these cases, and I had all these ideas of where it could come from. And I've kept a lot of these in. Obviously, like getting...
Dear, that's great. I like that.
Getting adpositions from body parts isn't especially unique, but one of my lecturers was quite proud of a paper that he wrote about the development of prefixes specifically in Panoan languages coming from body parts, because in South America as a whole, actually, there aren't that many languages with prefixes. And so the motivation about why this like closed class of prefixes emerged in Panoan languages was considered quite influential. I didn't make these prefixes. I think I'm very comfortable in left branching languages, and it's I think if you say something's exclusively suffixing, no one's gonna question you too hard.
Yep.
I don't know if that's true or not, but there's enough exclusively suffixing languages where I think you can get away with it if you just say that's what this is.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
And so I just kind of made everything a suffix, and but you can see in here, like, for example, the topic was originally going to alternate between the long vowel plus ngang and wang.
Okay.
And I was, when I got to doing the relay, I was just like, there's no way that I'm gonna make someone try and work out what the root is based on the metric fitting and then change the the suffix based on that. I think that it made more sense to me when I could just do everything with Lexigy. And this isn't like a critique of Lexigy at all. It's just if you assume that you can always have someone work out what happened diachronically, and you take it to a step where it's not very obvious. Like, when this happens in Agua Runa, it's quite clear because none of the consonants reduce, especially. You just lose the vowels. So in this case, it'd be equivalent of something like, if we have a, imagine there's an A before it, it would be aung, which then became ung. Or for example, you would lose the final A in wang, which is the root for to talk, and you would just get wang as the topic marker. I just went with what I had used in the script, because I had my lines that I didn't want to mess with too much.
Mm.
And I took the forms that I had used, and went with that, basically. A lot of it I can kind of do by memory now. And originally, these were all going to be clitics. If we go back to the current form, the ergative and the dative, which originally was a benefactive, but then I didn't have a dative, and it seemed silly to call it a benefactive without a dative as well. Those are more irregular, so I provide them in my documentation separately. But these cases like T and Ro, because these are, they don't affect the word that comes before them. They just kind of criticize on. And so they form a phonological word because they affect the tumora rule.
Yeah.
But they just attach to the absolutive form of the word. And this whole, so in going back to the example sentence of in the Amazon, the eagle is the fastest. The idea of eagle side, I did take kind of from Japanese. They have this construction of nan no yo, which means like, I actually don't remember what yo means exactly, but it's something like you define a kind of positional argument about the topic of comparison, and then you say the adjective. So because I knew that I had this appudessive case that meant on the side, mm-hmm. I thought, oh, I can take this thing that I didn't end up using and turn it into part of my comparative construction.
You know, I would imagine it would potentially also be useful in just a general description case, just to be like, if you wanted to make it clear that this is what you're talking about when you've already got something else marked as the topic. Like, could you just say without the sasak, could you just say chiwati as like the form of eagle in this construction where the Amazon is being marked as the topic?
I think so.
Okay. It's totally fine if I misunderstood that, and like the answer is no. It's just, you know, like that's an interesting thing that could potentially be useful to like secondarily mark a, hey, this is also important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that with this is a kind of way of you're specifying the relationship that is underspecified in the original construction, right?
Yeah.
So because the construction with an adverb plus adjective construction is it's not specific whether it's less sad or the least sad.
Right.
Whereas chiwati sasaktushtus, the eagle is the fastest. I think it could be the eagle is fast. I think that it's quite hard because there's no context for these example sentences, right?
Yeah.
So I think that if you had if you had as your topic like another like if you made it Rapong and Chiwati Sasaktustus regarding the iguana, the eagle side is more fast. You would, I think, get the interpretation of the eagle is. You would basically be, it'd be like a kind of focus change, right? So I have examples of how to say the turtle is bigger than the iguana coming up. So the standard way you would compare, you'd introduce your. And now I'm trying to remember how I defined the. So you have your topic and you have your standard of comparison and you have your quality.
Mm-hmm.
So up till now, there's only been the topic and the quality. And the standard hasn't been introduced. So when you add the standards of comparison.
This is fascinating. Go ahead.
I've been using an intensive case, so in front of or over, to introduce the fact that the so sasak comes from a word for kapok tree, which is one of the tallest trees in the Amazonian canopy.
Nice.
And so the idea is that the over quality being marked on the standard of comparison made sense as a way of marking this case rather than a case that just meant then or a like a post position or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not so happy that there aren't so many post positions. It's something that I'm gonna look into working on more, especially with the language we're currently doing on Let's Have a Booba. Quechua is kind of infamous for just having this huge number of cases. I did want to get up the walls map.
Mm-hmm.
With it's just a number of cases, but going from the kind of pale colors and the yellows to reds and blacks, and you can see that in this kind of Andean area, you have mm-hmm. some cases that don't match, like Amwesha. But you have Awapit and Ipinapide in the kind of northern Amazon that have more than 10 cases.
Yeah.
While there are plenty of Amazonian languages in outside of the Peruvian area, many of the ones that are in Peru and Ecuador and Colombia do have quite extensive case marking. And so I thought it would be, it kind of aligned with what I enjoyed doing at the time, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with going with what you like doing, but I think it becomes a problem if you notice a pattern. and as I said, two times isn't necessarily a pattern, but I think it's something that I've become more conscious of as I've used Pankashka and Yatlao more, that it gets a bit unwieldy to have all of these cases that don't necessarily help. Like when you're getting into using, like having to search hard, like far and wide to find the latter, like I think I even invented the term postessive for behind or under, because I couldn't find a description of a case that
I certainly have never seen it unless and I don't know, unless you look at the cases in a language Conling you may have heard of called Gieler. it does have a postessive and a postlative.
Mm-hmm.
good.
So yeah, and I think Napna was like, so Sasak was like a reduplicated form of Staka, I think, was the original form. And Napna was also from a recuperative of the riverbed, I think. Like the idea that it was lowest than the low thing. That was kind of what I came up with. And when you announced that you wanted people to like share parts of their conlangs with I think specifically because I knew Jesse had like written this chapter and had the nice picture, I was like, oh, like, let me do this, and then maybe, Jesse, you can do, like, the feedback sort of thing with it.
Yeah, I love it. This is amazing, and I love seeing the examples. I love the choices that you've made here. And very cool. And very cool to see my image used in a reference grammar.
Yeah. So I want to mention a couple of things. First, I want to go over some of these examples again more quickly. But I also have a suggestion, not a like change of suggestion, but a motivation suggestion. But first, these two examples, right, this is just incredible. And I like that so this is both the turtle is bigger than the iguana and the turtle is less sad than the iguana. The comparative nouns that you get more and most, those are optional, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, because essentially if you hear them enough and you have this word that's commonly associated with, you know, superlative, and this other word that's associated with sublative, for lack of a better word, but it's also, each of them are also associated with a unique case, then by the time you hear the construction enough, you can probably just drop the extra word. But I also love the construction idea, because usually if you come up with, say, the superlative and the sublative examples here, regarding the turtle, the iguana, over the iguana, it is big, right? Regarding the turtle, under the iguana, it is sad. That makes sense on a very metaphorical level. But to actually get it with the comparative nouns in there, both this tall tree and the riverbed. So it's like over the tall tree, under the riverbed. That's a really, really good. I love that. I think it's wonderful. I want to revisit the previous examples. This is, by the way, I'm assuming that these acute accents, they're they've been placed quite specifically. So you have
Hey, your mom
contours.
Didn't put them in for me.
What?
You said your mom didn't put them in for me. They weren't, like, when she does Spanish.
There we go. So they're contours. They're contours.
Yeah.
You know that my mother is a patron, too. I know she doesn't always listen to the podcast, but yeah, I gotta tell her. She got zinged. She got boomed. But so we have Tinho Minha, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's just, you know, regarding the Amazon. You have Eagle Side, more most, it is fast, right? So within the Amazon, the eagle is the fastest. This is why this made sense to me. In English, and I'm just using English here because we're speaking English as an example, but you can say something like, you know, I gave the fish a flower, right? And because of the verb, everything is licensed. And so you know in that sentence in English exactly what each noun is doing. However, if you were to say, I talked to you the soccer match, that's not licensed in English. There is essentially an argument there that is hanging out and you cannot resolve it. Like if you were forced to, you could probably guess what it's regarding because we know the way the world works and how talking is, but specifically it's not grammatically licensed. It needs something to tell you how to resolve that argument.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it feels like you need something to resolve this argument here. Essentially, it licenses this argument. Because, like, it's not as you're saying, like, the eagle is more than the Amazon or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not necessarily, you don't have any other standard of comparison that the eagle is more than. All you have is fast, eagle, Amazon, right? And so for me, it feels like this kind of thing licenses it, especially with these other two constructions where you already have this noun of comparison, so sasak, more, most, which occurs ordinarily with a specific case, napna, which ordinarily occurs with a very specific case in these specific constructions where you're comparing these two things. In this new construction, right, you don't have anything. And so it just feels like it needs something. And I think that makes a lot of sense. Anyway, that was how my brain made sense of it. And it was also why I didn't question it when I saw that it was in some kind of a case. It just made sense. Anyway. So yeah, I was just throwing that out there about that. Also, just in general, and I think we've talked about this before. There are certain areas of grammar that personally I hate, like indefinite pronouns. I hate those, right? Mm-hmm. I just hate having to come up with them, or like those kind of relative clauses is like, you know, like whatever you want is fine. Hate that. Hate it with a passion. I hate having to come up with it. Comparison is one of them. Comparison is one of the things that I hate. There are so many moving parts, and it's really hard to come up with something that is unique and that is satisfying, that covers all the bases, and that works very well within the context of the language. This is brilliant. It's complete. It makes sense within the context of the language. It makes sense outside of the context of the language. It has very strong justifications in terms of how everything arose historically. And it's also efficient, which is nice. It's not overwordy. An absolutely beautiful, masterful comparative construction and wonderfully presented in this document. Absolutely, I love this.
Nice. Well, I think that is a wonderful note to wrap up this episode on, because I don't think I can say anything more than what David just said, other than repeating the things and the praise, because this is really, really delightful. And so happy to have had this conversation. And thank you, Jake, for volunteering to share this and to go first in our special episodes. And yeah, I hope people are inspired by this. And please, if you do look at the video, I think we'll also, Jake, you had mentioned that we could upload a document, I think, with it. Please do look at how this is written up, because the examples are really nicely laid out. And like, this is something where you can look at and understand how this feature works. And so if you're struggling with how to write examples and talk about them, I think this is a really great one to look at. Oh. And that's
cool. Jake, any parting thoughts, or let us know where we can find you on social media, which is just so like important for us nowadays.
At the point that anyone's listening to,
I know.
I guess this will go up on YouTube, right?
So. Yeah, no, and when season 7 is done, it'll also be added to our podcast eventually. I need to update those. So yeah, there will indeed. If you've been listening to our podcast though, and you're not a patron, and you don't follow Langtime Studio at this point, I think you know who Jake is. But
yeah, you can find me on Tuesdays now at Let's Have a Booba. You can find me chronically online on Discord. You can find me in too many relays for my mental health. You can find me gallivanting around the UK.
There we go.
Love it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.